Warning, this podcast may contain graphic violence, sexual themes, and bad language. If our language offends you, we apologize, but we do not give a fuck. Be mindful of your kids listening.
The Evil Never Dies Podcast.
Welcome back to the Evil Never Dies podcast, episode 232. And we're doing a Evil Talk episode this week. What's going on, Carl?
All is well.
All is well for once? Yeah.
Not really. Lisa just got out of the hospital again, so.
Yeah, I know. That sucks, man. But I know. Anyway, we got a special guest with us tonight. We got Mr. Greg Bozzelli from the Monsters in the Mosh Pit podcast, and he's also got a new podcast he's doing too. What? Tell us a little bit about that, Greg.
So it's called Sights and Sounds, A History of Horror and Heavy Metal, and it is with my good buddy, Raghul, is his moniker, and I'm Greg the Grave Brewer. Bozzelli, because I make drinks all the time, and on my TikTok and stuff, you can see my drinks that I make for the shows that I do and stuff. But the history part of Sights and Sounds is really digging into the history. We only have one episode out now, and it's just an introduction to the podcast and what we're looking to get out of it and what we hope the listeners will get out of it and the journey that we're kind of taking. It's kind of going to be almost like if you imagine a history book and the chapters and stuff that it is set up in. We're not going to go in sequential order, but we are starting with our next show being the early history of like the electric guitar and pre-Universal Monsters, so pre-1931 horror is going to be our first actual show, and then we'll branch off from there. We have a couple shows dedicated that's going to be dedicated to Canadian horror and Canadian heavy metal and how they influence each other. That's really what it's looking at, the influences between horror and heavy metal and how they interact and how they've always been part of each other's lives, you know, coming up in the history of it.
Cool, yeah, man.
That sounds great. And definitely for me, they've always intertwined. Always.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about the different, you know, genres and the people that are involved in it and the people that like it, you know, we've always been like the outcasts, right? I guarantee. Right. Growing up, every one of us felt like an outcast at some point, and we kind of
the weird guy, the weird kid.
We were the weird guys that liked heavy metal and horror, and that's okay because now that we're older, and now thanks to the internet, especially, we're able to meet people like you guys. You know, I'm in West Virginia, you guys are in Texas, and you know, we're able to talk just by clicking a button about things that we love, and no, we're no longer the outsiders. You know, the popular culture may think we are, but we have our own group now, and it's lovely to actually be part of that. And then you can tell people to go, you know, F themselves because we have our own group. It's kind of nice.
Exactly. Yeah, Brett does that quite frequently.
Me too.
Oh, shit. So tonight, I guess we're going to talk about a couple of subjects, and Greg's got a subject he's going to talk to us about too. So, but I guess we'll start out with the ones we're going to talk about first. And the first one is the Ozzy Osbourne Kanye West debacle.
Can you even call it a debacle at this point? I mean, it is what it
is. So, I didn't know that Ozzy owned all the Black Sabbath songs. So, how is he able to complain? Should Naomi and Geezer Butler be involved in this, or
Well, actually, I guess they all are, because I guess they get thousands of requests a year to sample their music, and they all four, even Bill Ward, has to sign off on it. And they signed off on this particular one. Have you read the Ozzy's Twitter post that he posted?
Yeah, I saw the Ozzy, well, I think it was on Facebook it came on, and I was sort of like, okay, that's really weird.
Well, he'd originally posted it to Twitter, and it said X. Or X, Twitter, X, whatever.
It's Twitter. I'm never calling it X. Call it X. It's Twitter.
But anyway, it states, this is right off the X post, Kanye West asked for permission to sample a section of a 1983 live performance of Iron Man from the US Festival without vocals, and was refused permission because he is an anti-Semite and has caused untold heartache to many. He went ahead and used the sample anyway at his album premiere. And it goes on to say that he wants nothing to do with this man.
Okay. So. Well, if it's from 1983, the US Festival, that would have been solo Ozzy. So
yeah.
That might make a difference as far as why Ozzy's the one doing the complaining instead of the rest of Black Sabbath.
Yeah, that would make sense, because he would own the rights at that point, I would assume.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, Sharon was talking about that they get thousands a year, and they denied him. And it's funny because they went out last Halloween, Ozzy and Sharon dressed up as Kanye West and his girlfriend. What's her name? I forget her name now.
Dude, I know nothing about that guy.
Yeah, he's irrelevant to me, so I have no idea who he's dating now.
Yeah, well, they had it here. I forgot her name. But anyway, yeah.
I'm terrible with the pop culture stuff like that.
So am I. I mean, the closest thing I've had is one of the granddaughters has been listening to that Taylor Swift here lately, so I've had to listen to that. But I will say, at least it's bearable compared to most of the pop of this day and age.
Yeah, my wife's been listening to Usher since the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So that's it. But I, you know, Usher came out when I was in high school. So.
That's true. Yeah, he's an older artist, actually, at this stage. You know.
Yeah,
I can tolerate that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he was taught. Yeah,
anything, you know, pre 2004, 2005. You know, I'm pretty good with anything after that. It's kind of like I just lost touch.
Yeah, I've lost a lot of touch, even with the very, very modern day. A lot of the modern metal, I've sort of lost touch a bit. I have to admit, the newer bands.
That I still dive into that every week, every Tuesday and Friday. I'm always digging in to see who's dropped what album, and that's still a lot of fun to me. Some of my favorite bands are brand new bands right now. So
that's good. Yeah, I still have a lot of the bands from 10 years ago I consider new bands. Unfortunately,
you know, we all grow that pattern, man. We get in the comfort of what we like, and you know, it's hard. But as far as, you know, the Kanye stuff, and I've never grasped his music. It just never appealed to me. You know, I'm not saying I've never listened to it, because I'm sure I have.
Most of it's all auto-tuned and stuff. I can't stand listening to that, you know?
Yeah, it's annoying. Like, I don't mind auto-tuning if you're doing it for the right reasons, but when you're doing it to
every song?
Yeah, exactly. The whole song, every song. Like, if you're going to throw something in there to make it sound different, cool, man, that's fine, you know? I like bands like even the Faceless. Now, they have a different lead singer now, but when they released I can't remember the name of the album. They released an album before, and it had a song on it. I mean, they do all this crazy stuff by adding like flutes and clarinets and different things into their heavy metal sounds. So I'm okay with adding and experimenting.
Sort of like a ska metal, maybe?
No. If you imagine like ambient death metal. Is kind of to describe that song. The song's called Digging the Graves, and they legit have a flute solo in the middle of it. So it works. It works, and they experimented, and it was fun, but they didn't do the whole album that way. It's not
so like Jethro Tull meets Death or something like that, or
like Jethro Tull meets Behemoth.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I have to admit, I say I don't listen to newer bands, but I do listen to a lot of newer German bands. That's usually where about everything I listen to comes from these days. And some of the power metal and some of the symphonic metal. And again, they'll throw some really weird instruments in there too. So
yeah,
sometimes I lie. I actually do listen to newer stuff, but it's mostly from Germany and over there.
Yeah, I mean, European bands, they're known for pushing the genre forward.
They are.
So it's a lot of fun to get into that kind of stuff, but I'm not trying to derail you guys into that right now. Let's get back.
Yeah,
to
I don't know much more about to say about Kanye West, honestly, Brett. I mean,
other
I'm
than
sure
he is an anti-Semite. He just publicly, he's lost a lot of money for what he believes in, you know.
Yeah, well, you know,
everybody dropped him, like his label dropped him.
Yeah,
lost like Adidas sponsorships and stuff. Like, that's crazy.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm sure this was Sharon Osbourne and not Ozzy, but...
Well, she quoted, too, Kanye fucked with the wrong Jew. That's what she quoted, because I guess she's Jewish.
Okay, I guess that's why Sharon's upset about it.
Yeah, I know.
Ozzy's even know what's... Even know who the hell the guy is, probably.
Well, evidently he knew who he was. He dressed up like him for Halloween, so...
Well, yeah, but did Ozzy know, or did they tell him? I mean...
Well,
I know he knows Post Malone because he was on one of his last albums, but you know, that's a little different.
Yeah. But they got their podcast going on. I can't wait to listen to the episode that they talk about this. So probably be next week when they do it. So
I saw Kanye said something about there's got to be a handler or some a PR person or somebody handling Ozzy's account because Ozzy wouldn't say something like that about
him. It's Sharon.
Yeah, it wouldn't be Ozzy, I'm sure.
No. Sharon, or they got to have a PR person, but I'm sure Sharon told them what to write, you know. She's ruthless, man. You can't even use a Black Sabbath or Ozzy song for doing a like a TikTok video or anything. And if we put Sabbath or Ozzy music on one of our episodes, like if we do a midweek and snippets, it's blocked in every country.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
I know even for our podcast, we have proprietary music that we've like got artists to do for us. I know Ryan Postlewaite from Byzantine does our stuff for Sights and Sounds. And then we have Jared Tuberville from, oh shit, I just lost the name of the band, Lunatic. He does our songs for Monsters and Mosh Pit. So.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we were supposed to get a song from Chris Minta from this corporate, but he's sort of disappeared here.
I talked to him a couple days ago. He's been sort of staying to himself, doing a new record. So I think he's really trying to work on that. So,
well, I think that record blew up way bigger than he expected. And he just sort of did. Yeah.
So he was saying, he said he can't mail them out fast enough.
Yeah. So
it's a good problem to have.
It is a good problem to have.
Exactly.
So, yeah, Chris has sort of disappeared for now, but I'm sure he'll get around and get us some music here.
Yep.
He's a man of his word.
And that's the fun thing about doing what we do. We get to talk to all these people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot of fun, man. That's my favorite part of it. And talking to different podcast people and talking to all the different creators. That's my favorite part of the whole thing.
Yeah, we got press passes for Texas Frightmare Weekend too, so that ought to be cool.
Awesome.
That was actually your influence. Yeah.
Yeah, that was your influence. You told us to do that, so
it works, man. It makes it so much fun. It gets you involved with the communities. It gets you involved, and by communities, I mean like the horror and heavy metal communities. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's great to be involved in your local community for different things, and you know, get people to know you and who you are, and try to support you. But at the same time, getting involved in the communities that matter for us is horror and metal, and going out to cons and seeing all the people that are just there for the same reasons, it's so much fun. Raul and I are getting ready to go to back to Horror Hound again in March, and Dave, my co-host on Monsters in the Mosh Pit, will be with me, and we almost go as, like, if you imagine, you know, if you ever went to summer camp as a kid and you have friends that you only see at summer camp, it's like going back to see your friends at summer camp. It's kind of what it feels
exactly
like talking all the different horror and stuff. It's just so much fun just getting involved and being part of the group finally. Because, like I said, a lot of us were outcasts. We didn't have groups growing up.
Yeah, that's the way, like, that's the way, like, Trans World is, too. You ever been to Trans World? St. Louis, they have it's the Halloween convention.
It's more haunted house industry convention.
Yeah. It's not really horror people, but yeah.
That sounds awesome. I have friends here that runs it's a haunted house called Scareview. It's in an old elementary school. And it's fun talking to them, and just like I said, just let me come be an actor for a night, and just let me get my aggression out, my fun out, just, you know, stuff like that.
Do it, man.
I want to. I'm a big dude. I'm 6'2", 250 pounds, man. I can make a great Jason or something.
Yeah.
Do it. It's fun. But anyway.
So, not to slam on your Kanye West, but that's my opinion. It was probably Sharon. Mm-hmm. And like you said, I mean, Ozzy's, I guess, you know, he's not the Ozzy I grew up with anymore. He's corporate Ozzy now.
Yep.
I mean, I could care less what
he still speaks his mind on that podcast, though. What mind he has left. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's still pretty coherent, though. But you've never been able to really understand a lot of shit he says, ever.
No, so, I remember in the late 80s and early 90s when Ozzy was, every time we'd go to an Ozzy concert, we were like, well, what are we going to get? Are we going to get the drunken, rambling, throwing up Ozzy, or will he be semi-good? And you never knew.
Exactly.
Marilyn Manson was the same way. Every time I go to a Marilyn Manson show, it's like, it's a coin toss. Which one are you going to get?
That's a good, true. We've actually got Rob Zombie and Alice Cooper coming to town here in September.
Yeah.
We have our new Dickies Arena in Fort Worth. So,
what was that?
We have an arena. You know, we live in the Dallas Fort Worth area, so Dallas usually gets all the big shows. But they built an arena in Fort Worth, and it's actually stealing all the shows away. So, it's kind of cool that you don't have to drive all the way to Dallas to see a good concert now.
That's great.
And they let them do pyro now.
Yeah.
Dave, my co-host on Monsters in the Mosh Pit, his dad does a lot of the pyro locally.
Really? Here. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. Dave just sent me a video. I'll send it to you guys. Of Disturbed was here last night or the night before. Must have been the night before. And the finale was all fire. Like fire. Really? Yeah, I'll send you the video. It's
pretty sick. That'd be neat.
And that's, Dave's like, I'm kind of pissed that my dad did it. Or sorry, I'm kind of upset that my dad did it, because I didn't get a chance to do it. And all that pyro was going off and stuff. It was so cool.
Yeah, the city of Dallas, for some idiot reason, decided to ban pyro at one point. So
there was a lot of problems with, you know, you had that club burn down.
Yeah, the Great White thing, yeah.
It was a Great White. I couldn't remember if it was Great White or White Snake.
Actually, it was the singer of Great White, but it wasn't even the band Great White. They got the blame for it, but it was the singer.
Oh, really?
What was his name? I think his name is Jack Russell, like a dog.
Jack Russell Terrier?
Yeah. He'd like been kicked out of Great White, but was still using the name, and he didn't even own the name.
Oh, wow.
Weird shit, yeah.
It's funny. Oh, but yeah. It ought to be cool at Texas Frightmare. So the only thing, no guests. You can't talk to no guests. You can't interview nobody. It's just more or less for covering the event. So,
yeah, but they seem pretty psyched that we're doing it, from what I gathered.
So a lot of cons like that, where the con really wants you to fund the con. You know, the celebrities get their own pool. They don't need help. like with Horror Hound coming up, we're actually covering the film festival side of it.
Oh, okay.
Therefore, so when I talk to when I'm there is I talk to a lot of these independent filmmakers and their actors and their producers and stuff like that, because that's who needs the word out, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's fun. No, it's great to go through the con, and you know, we have the opportunity to talk to any celebrity we want, as long as we're not impeding the process of con, is what they tell us. So okay. Like we could schedule something and say, hey, you know, I had Robert Kurtzman on my show, special effects grandmaster that he is, but I met him at Horror Hound, and I said, hey, come on the show, and he said, okay. So we scheduled.
Really?
Yeah, it took like 6 months to get him on the show, but I got him on the show, and it's being edited actually as we speak. Will be out soon, so you'll be able to hear that. But
awesome.
It's weird the way that you get a lot of these people. They're there for obviously that's how they make part of their living. A lot of these actors and stuff, they haven't been in movies that have paid.
Oh, exactly.
In a long time, so they go and they you know charge $80 for a photo op, and they get that money, and that's how they make
do.
Them. So it's you don't want to impede the progress of them making money or the lines at the show and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Lisa Rose was great. She was like, hey, come back later or come back Sunday morning before the con opens and we'll talk. You know, and that's how I got Felissa Rose on the show and stuff like that. So it's just a matter of finding people that are willing to talk. You'll make connections. Get a lot of business cards. That's the best way I've found. Just get business cards and keep in touch with people.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get some more cards made up.
Yeah, we need that QR code, Brett.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to have to get on there and make one and get her done.
Yeah, and talking about the independent films, we've decided this year that we're going to start delving more into independent films on our show and covering them because, like you said, they need the publicity a lot more than... I mean, we're not going to quit reviewing old horror movies, but I want to make that a new focus is great independent horror movies because I found so many just this year, you know, 2 months into the year.
Yeah. So I find myself watching a mixture of 80s Z-grade horror movies and independent films, which a lot of those 80s movies that I watch were independent films anyway.
They were.
But you know, there's a nostalgia factor involved with the fact that I was watching them at 5-6 years old that I shouldn't have been, but they, you know, it kind of led me to where I am today, where watching an independent film doesn't bother me. And a lot of these times you'll find some of these independent films with the technology advancement that they've had with cameras and stuff and the way that you're able to edit stuff online and not have to use the film and stuff. It just, independent films don't look like they used to.
No, yeah. That the movie Fog City is the one that I come across on Facebook of all places.
And the Killer Goats.
And yeah, that Killer was another
goats.
Film. That was fun. It was a funny one.
You seen
one.
That, Greg?
No, I need you guys to send those to me.
It is hilarious. It's fun. It's a funny, you know, horror movie, but the Fog City is more serious, but it
yeah.
Same director. But yeah, we're going to try to get a hold of some of them guys and do some reviews on those movies. And then Brett's got me into the whole Addams Family thing going now.
Oh yeah. I love the Addams Family. They're
yeah. You got to interview them. That was really cool.
Yeah. John and Toby are two of the probably most down to earth, coolest people I've ever talked to. And John being an old school punk that grew up in New York in the '80s, you know, it was fun talking to him just about music and stuff.
I bet.
It's just they're I love their films, so it doesn't hurt the fact that I enjoy watching what they're making as well. So it makes the process easy. But yeah, John and Toby are great people.
Yeah, they are. Yeah,
they have another new movie coming out. Should be within the next couple months.
Didn't they film it over in Serbia or Croatia or something like that?
It was in Europe somewhere. I want to say it was like maybe Germany or something like that. But
yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's that's a throwback monster film too, which is, you know, if you look at the title of my one podcast, Monsters and the Mosh Pit, you know, that's my thing as monsters. So I love that stuff. So
yeah.
We'll give you the info on that Fog City and Killer Goats.
Oh yeah, for sure.
There's a third movie he did too, but I haven't seen it yet.
My wife was laughing at me last night because I watched Shock 'em Dead. You guys ever seen Shock 'em Dead?
No, I haven't.
I don't think so.
It's Tracy Lords is in it, so if that tells you anything.
Yeah, she's, that tells me plenty.
Funny enough, she's the only one that doesn't take her top off. But it's about a heavy metal band back in like the mid 80s, and about a guitarist that sells his soul to the devil. And it's a lot of fun. You need to check it out. But that's the kind of random crap that I watch that my wife's like, why are you watching
this? There's a lot of that stuff on Tubi, dude.
Tubi has every damn thing.
That's where I watched it, was on Tubi.
Fucking really? Tubi has got more movies than anything I've ever seen in my life.
I know. We've always, since we started the podcast, we've glorified Tubi, man. Fuck.
Well, it's the big sale at movie trading company locally here. It's a buy two used and get one free. And I come across this movie called, I've never heard of it, called Dracula and Son, that had Christopher Lee in it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've never heard of it before. And it was like $30 on Blu-ray, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to pay $30. I get on the phone there, it's on Tubi, so I was watching it last night.
Really?
Yep. It's freaking hilarious.
Is it late 60s or early 70s?
It's mid 70s.
Okay.
It's after Hammer.
After
Hammer, okay. Yeah. It was like a French film or something.
Huh. You texted me that, and I was like, what the fuck is that?
Dude, we might have to watch it.
Oh, and I seen at one of the theaters, old theaters here in Fort Worth, they have a movie night, and they were playing the seven, whatever, the one we're going to cover, the Kung Fu vampire movie
The Seven Brothers Meet Dracula?
Yeah, yeah. They were playing that. They had that at the theater. That would have sort of been cool to go see.
You should have, yeah.
If you're into Kung Fu movies, check out The One-Armed Executioner. That's a pretty good one.
Is it like the old 70s?
Yeah. It's
Saturday matinee.
So they termed the phrase gunfu. And it's basically, you know, I'll give you a little synopsis, but he basically loses his arm and learns to fight again with one arm, but he uses guns and kung fu, and he takes revenge on these people that you know, did him wrong. It's really good.
Sounds awesome.
It's really good. But it is straight up 70s exploitation greatness.
I used to see them all the time. What was this one called? I remember my mom took me to, a Shogun Warrior. And all it was people getting people's getting limbs cut off.
Oh yeah. You get that old school Kurosawa blood, and it's just, yeah, it's good shit.
Yep. Good times, good times. All right. What's next on the list here? Oh yeah. The other day I drive when I work. So this album, a song off of this album came up on my Apple. It's from Deep Purple, Come Taste the Band.
Oh God. That's the album without Richie Blackmore.
This is the last out. This was when they broke up in 1976 or whatever.
Yeah, so they had they fired Ian Gillan a few years ago, like Richie Blackmore did, and hired David Coverdale to become the lead singer, who was like 18 years old, nobody ever heard of. And what did they put out? And then they had Glenn Hughes from Trapeze, who took over on bass because they fired what the hell was the bass player? Roger Glover.
Yeah.
So they brought in Glenn Hughes to be co-singer and play bass. And they put out two pretty damn good albums. And it was like, okay. And then out of nowhere, Richie Blackmore just up and left. So he was the brains behind Deep Purple, somehow they continued on without Richie Blackmore. He formed Rainbow. And they hired this guy, was named Tommy Bolin.
Tommy Bolin, yeah.
To take over lead guitar for Blackmore, and they put out that album you're talking about, Come Taste the Band. And by this point, they sounded nothing like Deep Purple.
No, it was like some funkadelic. Some of it was. I was like, what the hell is this? This ain't Deep
Purple. I don't know how they got there, because Glenn Hughes come more from a blues background.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is sort of a, it's a weird fucking album that really has no way of being named a Deep Purple album, in my opinion, at least.
Tommy
without Blackmore, Dolan. without Gillan, it's just, I mean, it's just not really Deep Purple.
And that Tommy Bolin, he came from the James Gang, I think he was.
Ain't they, weren't they like a funk group?
Well, they were rock and roll. I think they had one big hit. I can't remember the name.
I don't know. Well, where did the funk
seems to me?
Okay, yeah, I'm I know who they are.
You know, not a bad song.
You get
song,
into the but... early 70s, that's a little bit not my specialty right there.
Yeah, you were just born then, so.
Yeah, I don't delve a lot into that period of time.
I was born in the 80s, and I still know, you know.
Well, I listen to 70s music, but when it comes to bands like the James Gang, I don't.
Yeah. But.
I know exactly who.
I don't really have an opinion on it, guys. After Machine Head, I'm pretty much out.
Yeah, Machine Head was their best album, really.
I prefer exactly. Machine Head, the band, you know.
Over. Right? I remember my friend Beeson once, we were going to see somebody, and Machine Head was open, and I convinced him that it was a Deep Purple cover band. He's like, oh, hell. I can't wait. And then he was a little shocked when it was Machine Head. But you know what? He was cool with it. He's like, you fucking tricked me, dude. But Machine Head's a great band.
Yeah, they just have unlimited bangers. You know, it's they're one of those bands that I don't think they've had an album, even reinventing themselves. You know, they went from like The Burning Red, Blackening, those kind of albums to Unto the Locust and stuff like that. They're still relevant. Like,
they are
making bangers over and over and over again. So.
Yep.
More so than Deep Purple, yeah.
Yeah, this album, though, man. Oh, my God.
Like, Come Taste the Band?
Yeah, it's like, what kind of name's that, dude? Come Taste the Band.
I don't know. I think the album cover has like a...
They're like in a wine glass or something.
Yeah, they're in a wine glass. That's what I was going to say. We're like in a goblet. Yeah. And it's got their heads sticking up out of it. And, hey, I love David Coverdale, but...
I know.
I mean... He was way better in the early Whitesnake than any of this crap by far.
Oh, yeah.
But again, he was more of a rhythm and blues guy, and that's sort of what early Whitesnake was until they, you know, went commercialized 80s later on. But yeah, that Come Taste the Band is not an album that I would consider.
Well, somebody in Greg's group posted Rush Fly By Night or Deep Purple Burn, and I was like, I love Rush. But
Burn's a badass album.
Mistreated is one of the best fucking rock songs ever fucking wrote.
Yeah.
Shit, Burn might be fucking their best. Besides Machine Head, that's probably my second favorite album of Deep Purple.
Exactly.
That, and they did one in the 80s. I think it was, I forget the name of it now.
Oh,
House of Blue Light, one or the other.
Oh, what was the reunion one?
Perfect Strangers.
Yeah, is that the one you're talking about, Carl?
That would be the one. That was their, because half of them were in Whitesnake at the time. I think Roger Glover and I think the drummer even, Ian Pierce, they were all in Whitesnake after they left Deep Purple.
I think wasn't Glover in Rainbow
He was in Rainbow, but I think he was
in Rainbow with Blackmore, yeah.
He was producing shit, I think, too. He was all over the place. But the weird thing is Blackmore had fired him out of Deep Purple, but then brought him into Rainbow.
Yeah.
And he stuck with Blackmore to the end at Rainbow.
Yeah.
When Jolynn Turner by then had took over.
Yeah, bands do that all the time. You have people that leave and people that have different things happening. I mean, you have Killswitch Engage. Lost Howard and brought back Jesse Leach. You have Korn lost Brian Head Welch, and then he came back, you know. But you know, you have David Silva, who's never came back. So it's
right, yeah.
You just have these bands are just unique organisms. There's bands that run under a name, Sepultura. Like if you look at Sepultura,
yeah, there's not. Yeah, that's a good example.
It's just exactly. Name, you know what I mean? So it's just a matter of, you know, things happen in life, and you know, it's just, so you can imagine like something not agreeing with each other back in the 70s and then in the 80s, you're like, you know what? Why are we being stupid? You know, why aren't we making music together? We made some great music together. Let's get back doing it again. And, you know, people put aside differences and do stuff like that. So,
but then a good example is Blackmore and Gillum. They got back together, but they decided they still didn't get along. So after the two albums, he fired Ian Gillan out of the band again.
Yeah.
So yeah, sometimes they do try it back again. It just don't work. A lot of times it does.
Like look at Pink Floyd, and you have bands like that. That
oh my God, yeah, they still hate each other, and they're all in their 80s by now.
Yeah. So but they can't have the level of success that they had when they were together.
No.
You can go off and do things separately, but you'll just never have that level of success again. And it's crazy the way the industry works. And you had that all the way back with, in the movie industry as well. Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, you know, if you look at them.
They broke up and they never got back together till right before they all got old.
Yeah. So it's just egos and personalities and stuff. It's just the way they are.
Dream Theater is an example with Portnoy, the drummer. You know, that it was basically his band, and he left to go, I think he was joined Avenged Sevenfold, and that didn't work out. But by then they'd already moved on and got another drummer, and they're like, sorry dude, you know, you left and went to another band, so we moved on without you. Well, he's recently finally went back to Dream Theater.
Portnoy's a hell of a drummer, though.
He is one of the best drummers there is. Honestly, I think Dream Theater was probably holding him back because he put out some awesome ass music the years he was gone.
Yeah, so this album, I don't know, man.
Are you back on Come Taste the Band? What is it, Tommy Bolin you didn't like or what?
Well, he's okay. He's not the best. I don't think he was the right fit for Deep Purple, though.
He's not Blackmore.
You know, just this whole style of playing. I got to give credit to Glenn Hughes. He's an awesome singer, dude.
Glenn Hughes is a good dude.
He does a song here. It's called This Time Around. And he sounds like fucking Freddie Mercury, dude.
Glenn Hughes is a great dude, man. I'm telling you.
You got to listen to that song. If you listen to any song on this album, listen to that one and listen to him sing that song. Sounds like Freddie Mercury, man. He did a really good job on it.
So. I professed my love to Brett the other night of Queen. Like, it's one of the bands that I have an undying affection for. Doesn't matter what they've done. I've absolutely loved everything they've done. I don't know why. It doesn't really
There's fit. Some bands like that, yeah.
But it doesn't really fit with my style. Like my favorite band of all
no,
time.
No, it's
is my favorite band is Every Time I Die. Okay. They're a Buffalo hardcore band that was from the 1999 to like 2020. So like it doesn't really fit with my style, but for some reason, I don't know if it's nostalgia growing up with them or what, but I can hear a Queen song right now and tell you every lyric of it.
Hey, it's still all rock and roll at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you're
going to give. That's why we're here.
You're giving a thumbs down to Come Taste the Band.
I'm giving a big thumbs down.
Tommy Bolin.
Come Taste the Band.
He's not a bad guitarist. Well, and right after this album, he fucking OD'd and died too. So
that's true. Yeah,
well, that's sad.
Yeah, sad. But it's sort of Coverdale went and started Whitesnake and brought some of the guys with him, and then Rainbow got going. So there was some good stuff came from the roots of Deep Purple, and like you said, they had their little reunion thing that was pretty cool. And they still exist, but it's just they don't
Ian
really
Gillan
sound like Deep Purple. Ian Gillan and
I think
Roger Glover.
Is it Roger Glover still?
Yeah, and the drummer, Ian Pierce. Yeah, that's only three left. So
I mean, Ian Pace.
Looking at their album.
John Lord is dead, so yeah.
Looking at their albums, you have Turning to Crime, Deep Purple 2021. It looks like Ian Pace, Ian Gillan, Donald Airey, Roger Glover and Stephen Morse is the band.
Stephen Morse was in Kansas, I think, and he eventually replaced Richie Blackmore when he left. I think Satriani was in Deep Purple for a couple tours just to kind of help him out.
Huh.
But, you know, Joe Satriani can play anything.
Yep.
Yeah.
If anybody could replace Ritchie Blackmore, he could have. But yeah, Deep Purple's an interesting story, but I think you're right. They ended on a sad note in the 70s with that last album.
Yeah, it's
not of which was their fault. I mean, it's just when you lose the three biggest influences on the band, which was definitely Blackmore and Ian Gillan and Roger Glover, it's not the same band anymore.
Exactly.
I mean, I understand John Lord and Ian Pierre, or whatever his name is, the drummer,
wanting were to keep it together. Yeah.
Yeah, they were founding members of the band, but when you're down to that, it's just not much of a band left. It's like Sepultura, just like you said earlier. How they're still called Sepultura is beyond me.
No. The thing is that they're making music that's not bad, but
it's not bad music. It's just not Sepultura.
I'll listen to Caballero Conspiracy or Soul.
Definitely.
Yeah, the
yeah,
brothers.
Brett, you were telling me about this the other day. Yeah,
they just redid that out. I did actually covered the album on the show. They redid their first album.
That's what it was. We were talking about it, and you did a midweek on it.
Yeah, it was a few months ago. I did that. Yeah, mm-hmm. And it sounds awesome. And they recorded it live too. They played it straight through and recorded it live. So, and it sounds really fucking good. I went back and listened. What's that?
How do you feel about remasters?
Remasters?
Yeah, when they go back in and they retune it.
Everything.
For modern.
It's not a remix. It's a total remaster. Yeah.
Yeah.
Coverdale does it with all the Whitesnake shit all the time.
Now, if they're remastering off the original recording.
Yes. That's typically what they do is they'll take that original master and then they go in and they digitize it and adjust all the levels to make it sound crisper, cleaner,
more bass, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
2020s sound.
So exactly. I don't mind that depending on what album it is. But
some albums sound really shitty, to be honest. They're just, yeah. The production was really bad. What was the Black Sabbath album with Ian Gillan on it?
Born Again.
Born Again. That's a very badly produced and mixed album.
But the remaster sounds.
The remaster
way better.
Sounds fucking awesome. Yeah, that's a good example of one that works.
But now, how would you feel about like Abbey Road being remastered to today's sound, or you could listen to it on an album?
I would probably say the album would have to be better. Ain't got no input because he.
I would have an input. I don't think you can fuck with the original. I think that would be sacrilege, really.
Yeah.
Just like Led Zeppelin. I'm more Zeppelin than I would be anything. And yeah, you don't want to go, you know, they actually did remaster Jimmy Page back in the 90s. I think the entire catalog and made it sound better, but he didn't fuck with anything.
Yeah, like you think about, like imagine like Zeppelin 2. Like imagine that album coming out.
You can't do it, yeah.
I just couldn't imagine listening to that. I'd rather listen to it on my vinyl over here.
Exactly.
Yeah, it depends on the album. What was it that got?
But the Cavalier Brothers, they totally re-recorded that.
They re-recorded,
album.
Yeah.
That wasn't a remaster.
And that's I've heard of a couple different bands doing that. There was another band that did that just recently, and I can't.
Obituary remember. Just redid "Slowly We Rot."
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
I know. I just saw one just recently pop up, and I was like, well, "That's kind of weird that they did a re-recording and not a remaster of it."
There's a few of the bands that don't own any rights to their albums anymore, and they've actually went back and re-recorded because they can't get the masters at all. Or what was it? Was it Universal had that fire, and a lot of the master tapes got destroyed. A lot of the artists that were on Giffen Records, especially. So in a case like that, you can't remaster or remix or do anything with it because the masters are gone.
Exactly.
That was an absolute travesty. Hopefully people can find like original copies of reels and stuff like that in their attic somewhere of some of that shit. That was an absolute travesty.
It was. It was.
It was the Hindenburg for entertainment.
Who was it? It was Twisted Sister. They actually re-recorded Stay Hungry and called it Still Hungry and made it sound modern, but they just re-recorded it and it's a lot heavier and a lot more intense because Dee Snider just was a heavier dude by then. His voice was deeper, and I like that because it was obvious that it was not Stay Hungry. It was still Hungry, but it sounded better to me just because it was heavier and faster, and because that's how they sounded live back in the 80s.
Yep.
They kind of got trapped into the whole commercial catalog, but they're a really heavy fucking band live.
The album back in 2018 that Dee Snider did with Jamie Josta producing.
That album is great.
Yep. For the Love of Metal.
Yes.
It's pretty dope.
I love that album. But I'm a big Dee fan. He's one of, you know, as a kid, I thought he was the coolest thing there was. That is a great album. Yeah.
Dude, Dee was trying to do all this weird stuff with his vocals, and Jamie pulled him aside and said, "What are you doing? You're fucking Snider. Be Dee Snider."
Yeah.
And it's like, it changed his whole mindset on it. Cause I listened to an interview with Dee Snider on, I don't remember who he was talking to, but, and that's what he said. He goes, "Jamie pulled me aside and told me this, and it just made sense. It clicked for me." And that's what this album is. I think it was on Liquid Metal on Sirius XM was when that album came out. He was doing like little snippets in between songs and stuff. And I loved it. Like, it's one of my favorite Dee Snider albums.
He's got Corpse Grinder on that album too.
Yep. It's a great album. Jamie's on the song.
He put out a second one with Jamie producing it, Leave a Scar, and it's as good. It's just as good, if not better.
Is it really?
It's good. Yes.
Yeah, I heard.
Maybe that's what is that the one with Corpse Grinder on it?
I believe it is.
Okay, I know one of them, Corpse Grinder, did a song with him on there.
I think he did that one during COVID because he said he was all depressed and bummed out. So it's a real. It's darker than the first album. It's Dee wrote some dark lyrics in his day. Some of them Twisted Sister songs were just freaking depressing dark. So that's a side of Dee that people don't really like to recognize, but it's there. But I recommend that album as well.
I'm adding it right now.
Yeah.
I just added it to my playlist. That's the cool thing about Apple Plus, man. I just click on it. And
right. I love it too.
It's ready to go.
Yeah.
It's worth the $10 a month for sure.
Oh, hell yeah.
The only problem is if you have family sharing like I do, like every now and then I'll get like a Monster Truck song from my son or from my wife, you know, stuff like that. I'm like, what? I'll be listening, like I'll be rocking out at work and have my AirPods in and I'm going to town. All of a sudden it'll be like Justin Timberlake. I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm going to get Taylor Swift into my mix here since Ms. Ayla was listening to it her birthday
weekend. Well, if you've added it on yours, then you for surely will.
Well, we didn't add it. We were just playing.
I get bubble Siri. Guppy stuff sometimes because I.
Oh yeah, bubble guppies and 20 trucks and stuff pops up on mine. I'm like, come on.
So your son's big into Monster Trucks.
My son is an absolute fanatic for Monster Trucks. Like we were at home today, but my wife went and got a small tattoo today, and while Silas and I were at home, he was like, "You know that new truck that came out on Monster Jam? I want to watch that release video again." I'm like, "We've watched that like 100 times." He's like, "Yeah, I want to watch it again." So we had to go on YouTube and pull up the Digatron release video and watch the whole 7-minute release video of Digatron coming out and jumping to all the different forklifts or skid steers and backhoes and stuff, doing all their stuff. And I'm like, "Are you happy now?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "I really want that Digatron." I'm like, "Well, they haven't released it yet because you have every freaking truck that's ever been released in the last 6 years."
So that's the same way with my granddaughter. She's got 230 of them now.
See, we've never counted. I just keep building shelves. That's I am the master of building shelves now because that's all I do in my house is build shelves for Monster Trucks and random crap for me, like VHS tapes and liquor. So
they're going in 2 weeks. AT&T Stadium Monster Jam is going to be there. They get to go. So
yeah, we just went to Hot Wheels, did a Monster Truck show here. We went to that. And then we're looking to go to Columbus here, I don't know, in the next couple months for another show.
It's expensive.
Yeah, because we have to do the pit passes and the meet the drivers and all that kind of thing.
Well, it's costing my ex-wife with parking close to $1,000.
Oh, my goodness. That's way more expensive than it is here.
Well, anything that's at AT&T Stadium is more expensive.
Yeah.
That's Jerry Jones, the Cowboys owner's thing. And
It has a huge stadium though, so
It holds 100,000 people.
Yeah, so we have a small Civic Center here, so they can't do as big of a show as, you know, I would love to take them to an outdoor stadium show. So you're going to get an indoor stadium show with that. Now I would love to take him to one of those because he would just be flat.
Yeah, parking was $300.
Oh my goodness!
But they're right next to the front door though. So
I'll take it.
Oh, you're right next to the front door, but what's it going to be like getting the fuck out of there?
Yeah, exactly. What's crazy is the AT&T's parking is so expensive, and then if you go to baseball, which is right down the street, the parking is reasonable for.
Yeah, it's like $15 or something.
Yeah, for Ranger games, you may pay $20 if you park close.
I think I paid $10 to go to the Civic Center. So, and I was like, man, I'm paying $10 for this. And that's just because we were parking in the parking garage at the Civic Center.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell y'all, as a kid that loved monster trucks in the 80s, but I haven't kept up with them, I'm glad to hear that it's still alive and going.
Oh, it's big time.
It's huge now. I think when Bigfoot was the only monster truck when I was a kid.
Dude, it wasn't just
Gravedigger.
Yeah. Gravedigger. I remember Gravedigger.
Well, we watched that show, or we watched that video today too. They did a Gravedigger 40th anniversary show back in 2022 because they came out in 1982. And they had all the Gravedigger trucks. They had the original red one and then the blue one and then all the Gravedigger painted ones from 86 and then the 20th anniversary, 30th, and then the 40th anniversary. And then the 40th anniversary jumped over all of them.
Oh, and wow.
He watches that at least once a week. Like, it's crazy. But yeah.
Does your son watch the there's some family that they do videos on there playing with all the trucks? Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, my granddaughter's all into that.
Yep, and it annoys me because I can't stand the sound of, like, the dad is like super fake about it, like he doesn't want to be there, and he's like, "Oh yeah, that's really cool." And I'm like, "Dad, you hate your life right now. I can tell."
They do set up some cool shit though to run them trucks on though. I have to admit that. Make some cooler shit though.
That sounds like me on a bad week for the podcast.
Oh, you don't want to be here. That's me everywhere.
Right? Yeah, I can feel it, man. Well, what other topic we got, Greg?
I don't know, Greg. What do you got? You said you had something to bring to the table tonight. So
I do. And you guys may not even have an answer for it, but it's something that goes with the new Sights and Sounds podcast. And that is, what is your favorite heavy metal? Not really heavy metal, but your favorite heavy metal or rock inspired soundtrack. So you have things like Demon Knight, you have things like Trick or Treat from 86, you have
Trick or Treat's good.
End of the album from 1999 or 2000 with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yes.
So that's a hard one.
I know right away what mine is, which might surprise a few people, but it's actually the soundtrack from The Crow.
That's the only one I didn't say because I figured it might be somebody's answer.
The Crow, and my other one would probably be the Vampire Lestat or whatever they call that, Queen of the Damned.
Yeah, that's I would have to go with that. That is probably my favorite.
The Crow and Queen of the Damned.
There's so many good people on that album.
There are. There definitely are.
Yeah, I mentioned my favorites are the ones I mentioned. So like End of Days.
Trick or Treat is great.
Human Night. Trick or Treat is my favorite.
The Fast Way.
I actually have the Fast Way Trick or Treat album hanging up on my wall over there.
That is a cool album cover too.
It's great. Yeah,
I've still got my record from that from back in the day.
Sammy burning in the pumpkin. It's just so cool. So
yeah. Carl hates that movie though.
I don't really hate the movie. I just find it a disappointing compared to the soundtrack, if that makes any sense.
It does.
Gene Simmons and Ozzy cameos, I don't think it did anything for the movie. It just, they plaster their names all over it. And
that's what it was. I mean,
that was the fat Gene.
It was
fat Gene and
Dubby Gene.
Ozzy as a preacher.
Yeah. But no, I wouldn't say I hate Trick or Treat the movie, but the soundtrack is like a 10 and the movie's like about a 4 in my opinion.
Save that for when we review it.
I just saw it the other when Scarlet was in her in the closet, she's turned that into her own little private room. I found Trick or Treat and pulled it out. So we're doing it soon, Bubba.
Well, that's, we'll have to wait till Halloween now to do it. So
That's one of my favorite heavy metal horror movies. It's Trick or Treat.
Yeah, I love that movie, man.
There's some great ones though. You have like Rocktober Blood is really good. Strock 'em Dead, like I was just talking about, is really good. I got sent a copy of a movie called Death Metal by an independent filmmaker. And I tell you what, the soundtrack on that, if you're into death metal, is legit. It's one of the best death metal soundtracks I've ever seen. And then, of course, you have, you know, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective had Cannibal Corpse in them. So, yeah. We reach everyone.
Well, I'll throw you a pop rock, whatever you want to call them, that put out one of the best soundtracks. And that was John Bon Jovi with Young Guns 2.
Oh, yeah.
That was the best stuff that Bon Jovi ever recorded, in my opinion.
So I want to do a segment about just soundtracks, but I don't want to do it on my show because it's just not ready for it, or my audience doesn't really just want to hear me talk about soundtracks. But the you get into things like Top Gun and Young Guns and The Quick and the Dead and all these different like great soundtracks, and then you can get into like the spaghetti westerns like Morricone and you know, all those kind of things. They have some great soundtracks. It's not just music like we know, like popular culture music, but like soundtrack music as well. Like John Williams and his scores and Danny Elfman and his scores. Yeah, I'm a music guy. So when I get into like music, I could talk all day. So,
well, Italian horror movies, you know, Goblin, the band did a lot of the really classic soundtracks.
Oh.
Another one of my favorites is the heavy metal soundtrack, the heavy metal movie, the cartoon. Or animated or whatever.
That's
fucking good soundtrack too. It's got Black Sabbath and Blue Oyster Cult and a bunch of
Hagar.
Hagar. Don Felder, I think, did the heavy metal song on there. And
Don Felder did some pretty cool music after Eagles.
Eagles, yeah.
Yeah.
Heavy Metal 2000 has a good album too.
So there's that's a good topic, and that could be a focus on its own, just soundtrack. Well,
yeah, maybe we could do a soundtrack episode and have you back on, brother.
Like I told you before, man, I am always willing to come on and talk to people. That's I would rather talk to people on the internet than I would in person. So
well, we just throw everything out there. We've been getting a lot of complaints here lately for whatever damn reason. What was it? The album Brett that got. The Carnivore album.
Somebody complained about nudity because the album covers a vagina with teeth.
Yeah.
Oh, then definitely don't ever do any Cannibal Corpse.
Oh, I've done Cannibal.
Oh, Brett's already done Cannibal Corpse. It's the Tommy Bolin guy that's complaining about everything.
Oh man, that's a shame. You know, Infant Annihilator's got some good cover art. Death has some good cover art.
What'd we do? Taste the Blood of Dracula, and the guy said that I was talking shit about the director, and I wasn't. I said that's probably my third favorite of the Hammer Dracula movies, but the guy said I was talking shit about it. So,
well, we're just gonna be honest about what we think, you know?
Is that 1970 Taste the Blood of Dracula? I think.
68.
Yeah. That was close.
Not a bad movie. I didn't talk bad about it. It just wasn't Terrence Fisher who done the other Hammer Draculas. And Brett said the reason he didn't because he had like something happened to him. Was it an illness or something? And
broke something.
It was a different director. That's all I pointed out. It was done in a different style, but I thought it was, you know, but the dude, he was like trashing me on it. So like, I was like, well, fuck you, dude. You know, you have your opinion. I got mine and I'm the one on the internet and you ain't. Yes. I guess you are. You're dressed up like Tommy Bolin or whatever, playing the James gang.
Hammer is one of those few, those few big studios that I really haven't got too far in depth with, believe it or not.
It took me years to get there.
So
I really did.
I love the Universal.
Within the last 10 years is when I really got completely enamored with Hammer. It's a long burn to get there, honestly.
Well, I everything I've watched, I've enjoyed. Like, you know, I've enjoyed Christopher Lee's take on the Frankenstein monster. I've enjoyed his
yeah,
take.
That was good.
But it's just so hard coming from Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi and Claude Rains and all, you know, it is.
The Universals, it's like Hammer took it to a different level, but it sort of it got more gothic atmosphere, I would say.
Well, exactly. You know, you get that from that European style.
Yes, and that's what it was. It was the whole European thing.
Yeah, I need to dive deeper into it because it's one of my few blank spots.
Yeah. And most of the movies are on Blu-ray right now because it's sort of hard to get these on streaming. So the Scream Factory's got a lot of them out. Some of them are going out of print here soon. So
Max has a lot of the
Warner Brothers ones.
So yeah.
If you come across a title that's not available from Scream Factory or Shout Factory, then let me know, because he's not a great friend, but one of my acquaintances works for them and does a lot of the behind the scenes stuff.
Oh, okay, cool.
Really? That's
We're cool. Always promoting the Scream Shout Factory on the show weekly, yeah, just about, because hell, half the stuff I watch now they've put out.
If you watch my Facebook, I usually share a lot of his stuff that he talks about.
No, I'll check into it. Yeah.
They do some great, like he did like the, Can't Say Goodbye to the Boogeyman for the latest Halloween that was released through Scream Factory and stuff like that. So pretty good stuff. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. Supposedly they're coming out with a sequel to Halloween 4 too.
We'll see.
Yeah. That's what I say. I'll believe it when I see it.
We'll see. I always like to talk about Halloween 5. That's the one I like to talk about, just because you have the different cuts of it. There's a Halloween 6. Five is the last one with Daniel Harris.
Six is the one that me and Brett have a weird love for.
Do you really? Which version do you watch though?
The director's cut.
Okay,
I love it.
It's people better. That fans of it that I hear that are like, hey, I'm a huge fan of it. When I ask that question, they always say the director's cut.
Yeah, the regular cut just
ended. I like the ending on it better.
The ending is what, and it almost leaves it to where it H2O could be a sequel to it, since it's pretty obvious that Loomis dies at the end of the producer's cut. So it sort of leads into H2O, which Loomis had died and Michael had went through all of his files to find Jamie Lee Curtis. So I can actually turn that into a sequel. So I'm always looking for nifty ways to do stuff like that.
Call Jason Blum, Carl. Let him know.
No.
Fuck no. We don't like him. Well, we like original things he does. Yeah. But when he's remaking old stuff, yeah, it don't work out so well.
I enjoyed the new Halloween trilogy for what it was. I enjoyed the Rob Zombie trilogy, or Rob Zombie two movies that he put out. And I would have loved to have seen a third movie, because there were talks that he was going to do a third movie until, you know, the White Horses happened.
Yeah, the White Horses.
Yeah, he didn't. I think he ran out of ideas.
I will say watch part two of Zombies Halloween with a new set of eyes. Don't think about when you watched it back in like 2008,
yeah,
whatever it was. Look at it now and think about everything else that's happened, and look at what Rob Zombie's career has become, and watch it again. The dude had some great storytelling happening there. It just didn't communicate as well as he wanted it to, I don't think.
Well, I feel the same way with Halloween Ends. I watched it with a new set of eyes and like, okay, I'm going to watch this without anything. And Brett gets mad at me for saying it, but I semi-enjoyed it a little bit that last time I watched it.
Yeah.
I like the character. You know, what was the kid called?
Corey.
Corey. I kind of wish that they would have explored him in a movie of his own.
Well, you're back into Halloween 3 territory.
Yeah, and you would have been without Michael, but
you know what I mean?
It'd have been Michael.
That's what happened with Halloween Ends, is you had another Halloween 40 years
without
later,
Michael. Yeah.
Have Michael in it. And that's they didn't
pissed
learn
everybody off. Especially Brett.
I will go on record right now and say Halloween 3 is my second favorite Halloween movie. So I wish it was just called
Halloween
Season
3.
Of the Witch.
If it would have been called Season of the Witch, it would have been a huge big deal to people. I like Halloween called 3.
It's like I said, it's my second.
We've reviewed it on the show. We gave it a good review.
I like that
Brett,
movie. I've seen
Brett,
it in the
Brett
theater.
Did give Halloween Ends negative.
Fuck that show. Fuck that movie.
He gave it negative zero.
I just couldn't get into that piece of shit.
So, Brett, watch it with the knowledge.
No.
Of
he won't watch it again.
Halloween 3. I promise you, you'll have a new look at it.
He won't. It won't work for him.
Sequence, the opening title sequence is in the same color as Halloween 3, even.
We might get him to watch Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 before we would Halloween Ends.
Exactly.
Nope. Just keep your mind open and keep your.
I try to keep my mind open, dude.
Nothing is as bad as Resurrection, and that's all I gotta say.
Wait, the new Resurrection?
Halloween Resurrection, the one with no. Busta Rhymes in it.
Kung Fu Busta.
Yeah.
Now, there is a movie called
Resurrection. Get you, sucker.
No, Halloween with Halloween.
Yeah, the sequel
8.
H2O. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the sequel to H2O, where they kill Jamie Lee Curtis off in the first 5 minutes and Busta Rhymes shows up. And yeah, that there's still nothing worse than that. I'm sorry, Brett.
My co-host.
That had a good soundtrack to it, though, I have to admit.
Oh, back to soundtracks again.
Resurrection had a good soundtrack to it. I used to play it on the haunted trail at the haunted house I worked at in Illinois. So,
dude, yeah. Nothing beats Halloween 3's main intro. It's so good. Yeah. The main Halloween theme from Halloween 3 is the best Halloween.
I agree with you. I used to play that in some of my haunted houses, actually. Halloween
See?
3, the main.
All
yep.
You're coming, becoming simpatico here. Over
yeah.
Halloween. I see. What's funny is behind Brett is the Halloween 2 Michael right now. And
yeah.
It looks like he's like looking over us saying, like, can you talk about Halloween 3 right now?
yeah. And talk about Ends.
It's kind of funny.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't fuck with Brett's Michael Myers.
I got him on discount.
Hey, this is the best way to get him.
Yep.
Is that your favorite franchise, Brett?
Probably, yes.
What's yours, Carl?
I change it all the time.
Do you really?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I change. We did a franchise thing on the show years ago, and I think I did pick Halloween. And I didn't even rate Phantasm because Phantasm 3 is so terrible. But probably the Phantasm franchise, even though I hate 3.
Yeah, Phantasm 2 is really good.
It's great. That's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
And Phantasm 4, I think, is really, really good and underrated. They had no budget, but they made it work.
Those are my favorite. I mean, one of my favorite films of all time is Basket Case. You want to talk about a film with no budget?
I remember Basket Case, yeah.
Basket Case, Bad Taste from Peter Jackson. You know, I love really bad films. So, but my favorite franchise is probably either I bounce back and forth between Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th.
See, I like Friday the 13th probably a little better than Halloween in the end.
Where's he at? He's somewhere on my arm. Oh, there he is.
I love Jason better than Michael if I had to pick. Brett gets mad when me and Jimbo say,
I like Jason.
Well, there's a reason why Jason is in the front and Michael's in the back here.
All right.
Jason's just ruthless, man. He's just...
Yeah.
So he just don't give a fuck. He's like a honey badger.
Yeah, he's so good. I love Jason. I always will.
Jason and the Tall Man are my two favorites.
Good. That's good.
And the Wolf Man, the Lon Chaney Jr. version.
Yeah, that's this arm that's blank right now is actually becoming all the Universal monsters.
I love it.
That's what's going to happen on that arm. So this arm is cartoon 80s, and except for Captain Spaulding, he's one of my favorites too. So cartoon 80s and Captain, and then the other one's going to be Universal monsters. I'm a freak. Can't help it.
Hey,
All right. Well, does anybody got anything else they want to add?
No.
I think we've rambled on long enough.
I finally wore my money bags hat, like you said, that I got directly from Gene Simmons. So shout out to
rare,
Gene.
Rare, man. You can't buy them anywhere.
The guy that was selling the money bags vodka was like, well, why do you got that? I'm like, Gene gave it to me. He's like, he won't even give me one. I'm like, sorry, dude. He said, well, I'm the distributor for the Southwest of his vodka. I'm like, don't know what to tell you, man.
Sorry, awesome. Brother. As you're wearing the money bags hat and your Kiss End of the Road tour jacket.
Yeah. that Eric gave to me, yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. All right. Well, let everybody know where they can get a hold of you, Greg.
Well, depending on the podcast, Monsters in the Mosh Pit has a Facebook page that you can join. And that's where we talk a lot about like people posting and stuff. We don't do a lot of posting on there, but you know, there's a lot of community involvement, which is great. And then you can find us on Twitter at Monsters Mosh Pit. The show's on all the different platforms. If we're not on a platform that you use, let me know and I'll get it on there. And then Sights and Sounds, History of Horror and Heavy Metal. We're on Twitter at SNSPod1. And then Sights and Sounds at gmail.com. Monsters and the Mosh Pit at gmail.com.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've always thought that we're good brother shows. You know, we mesh so well together.
Absolutely. Exactly. And what's funny is Brett or Carl. I don't know who did the Slasher account back when Slasher was a thing.
Yep, that's where we met. Was on Slasher.
That's where we met, and I'm very thankful for that because this is just one of those things where it shows that you can find somebody on the internet, and we've been talking for what 3 years now that we've been talking. And you've been on shows together, and it's just so much fun. And you guys need to come on Monsters in the Mosh Pit and pick an album and pick a movie that we can cover together. Because
yeah, that would be great.
Let us know, man.
I mean, no, you let me know what movie and album you want to cover. I don't fucking care. But yeah, I just
but tell we them, ain't done for sure.
I have four hosts over there, and I just tell them what we're doing unless it's their turn to pick. And then even when we have guests, I say, well, the guests override your pick, so we're doing this. So
there you go.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, brother. We appreciate it. And good evil talk tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Maybe we'll get 10 listeners or viewers this time.
Yeah, people tend to get mad at our evil talks, and we don't know. We've renamed it 3 times. It was originally just Free For All. And it's weird for me because when I used to do our show with my show with Video Bar, his show with Video Bob, we just freestyled all the time. And we'd have 1,000 people, and that was before, you know, streaming was a big thing.
Yeah.
But with me and Brett, people.
That was cable access TV and shit. Back
well,
then.
Actually, we got onto the internet later and was doing it with Vinny Paul. We were actually kind of co-hosted with Vinny, even though he really never came on. But for whatever, people like me and Brett to have a topic to pick on. So hopefully tonight it'll be a little better.
Well, anytime
we had 3 topics and we sort of stayed on them.
Yeah. Anytime I'm involved, it's usually a cluster. So that's
All right. Thanks everybody for listening and watching. And we're not hard to find.
We're on YouTube. We push YouTube a lot now.
Hit that like and subscribe button. And thanks again for coming on, Greg. We appreciate it. And Steve, everybody. Bye.